Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia Exceed plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551, wash your hands. Pascal Wren is just one of many business people who've contacted us. I know it's a specific issue about the lockdown and now the confusion about how long the lockdown will persist, the current severe lockdown. On the front of today's Irish Daily Mirror, there is a report by Ciara Phelan, and she quotes the Taoiseach as telling her yesterday, this is obviously before the cabinet meeting, there will be a continuation of severe restrictions until the end of April. You can look at significant restrictions and we'll review it after that. So that's May. The headline reads, Level 5 lockdown till May. But this is what the tarnished Leo Varadkar told Brian Dobson about half an hour ago.
I saw the clip from the Taoiseach's interview last night, and what he said was that we're facing into tough restrictions into April, and I don't think anyone's surprised at that. He didn't say that we're going to be in level five till May, or that we were facing 9 more weeks of a level 5 lockdown. So, you know, in fairness to him, I don't think that's what he actually said.
Well, let's try and find out what the Taoiseach said, because Satan is saying he didn't say we'll be in level 5 till May. That's what everyone is hearing today. That's the headline in the Irish Daily Mirror who did the interview. Now, we've been going through the clips of the interview was obviously recorded by Ciara, and this is a clip we found. Now, we're looking for the actual words until the end of April, but listen to this segment yourself, and is this the Taoiseach telling us that we're going to be in level 5 till May?
We are looking at a continuation of severe restrictions, certainly right into April. We will have a meeting today of the Cabinet Subcommittee on COVID. We'll have a presentation from Dr. Ronan Ginn and Neffet, and we'll have a presentation from the National Task Force on Vaccinations and then the HSE. So our priority is schools, and it will be a phased return of schools, beginning with the junior infants and senior infants, the early years, and also then the leaving certs.
Severe restrictions well into April. What does that mean to most people? That means the severe restrictions we have at the minute, can they be? Well, we know they can be more severe, as in countries like the Lebanon, where you're told you can't go out for a month, full stop, no shops, and no visits whatsoever. You stock up for a month and you lock your apartment, as it is in the Lebanon, and your house. But do you take from that that when the Taoiseach says there will be severe restrictions well into April, does that tally with level 5 lockdown till May? It does in my book. But does that tally with what the tarnished Leo Varadkar said? Here's Leo Varadkar again half an hour ago.
I saw the clip from the Taoiseach's interview last night, and what he said was that we're facing into tough restrictions into April, and I don't think anyone's surprised at that. He didn't say that we're going to be in level 5 till May, or that we were facing 9 more weeks of a level 5 lockdown. So, you know, in fairness to him, I don't think that's what he actually said.
What did he say? He said there's going to be severe restrictions continuing until well into April. That's level 5 lockdown till May. That's what's driving people crazy, this mixed messaging. But that's the Taoiseach and the tarnished, both the tarnished interpreting what the Taoiseach said. You heard what the Taoiseach said. Do you interpret it differently? Have the Mirror got it wrong when they say level 5 lockdown till May? Has the tarnished got it right? And he said, no, that's not what he was saying. Pascal Wren. Pascal, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Could you face lockdown till the 1st of May? May Day, May Day, May Day.
Well, I'm kind of expecting it anyway. So, you know, what we have in place is kind of can carry on for another few weeks.
Well, you can't
think of certain things, you know.
Yeah, well, Pascal, one of the things that you will not allow you to carry on is the fact that you're getting parking fines every time you park outside your business, even though there's no one else parked there, to load up with deliveries. How much have the quantum of the parking fines in the last 6 weeks, Pascal?
So I've had 11 parking fines in the last 6 weeks or so, amounting to €440.
Okay, and where are you parking illegally?
So technically, and I put my hand up, it is illegally in normal circumstances. You know, okay. I wouldn't park there. I wouldn't expect anybody to park there. And I'm all for the regulations and the laws and the enforcement in yeah. normal circumstances. You know, home delivery service is something we started in the latest lockdown in December here, and it's proved really popular for us.
It's a takeaway from a coffee shop, basically.
Takeaway from a coffee shop, but I'm home delivering them myself from my car. And I have no other options but to pull up outside my shop to load up the deliveries every hour.
And is there a spot marked outside your shop loading bay?
There is a loading bay there. Yeah. When it's available, I do take it, but I have been ticketed for being in the loading bay because it's not a commercial vehicle.
But you are loading for a commercial enterprise.
Yes, but on the letter of the law, it's not a commercial vehicle, so I'm not supposed to be there. Now, I've talked to the traffic warden, you know, he left me alone when I was there talking to him that day, but, you know, that didn't last long. So I'm kind of at wit's end of what, you know, I've done everything, you know, that I parked in a kind of obstructing way the first few times, and I paid the fines because I agreed it probably wasn't the best place. I've tried to park in the loading bay. I found a spot behind my shop that's kind of not obstructing anybody other than the people in that shop. And I'm getting ticketed for being there. There's just no option for me, really. And it's just getting to the point where how long do I carry on with these deliveries, having to pay those fines?
And have you applied to the council and said, listen, pandemic, no shops open, I'm paying my rates, I'm doing my best to try and survive. I've opened a takeaway service for my products. I can't buy a van. Where am I going to get the money from the van? I'm in a car which I'm using perfectly legally to deliver my products. Why am I being ticketed all the time?
Yes, I have tried to contact the head of traffic, I believe, in the city council a couple of days ago. I haven't got any response. I had a great response back from the mayor, Mike Hubbard, here, actually contacted me personally, and he's done his best to try and come to some solution. He's contacted traffic too. He's going to bring up the issue at the meeting on Tuesday. Whether anything comes of it, I don't know. But in the meantime, you know, I'm getting ticketed every couple of days, you know, and I can't. I've appealed for the last four that I've got. Whether that will come to anything, I'm not sure. But yeah.
And Pascal, how is your business doing?
At the moment, it's great. You know, everybody has been reasonable. Landlords have been reasonable. You know, in fairness to Galway City Council, you know, like we've had a time off the rates, but we have been paying our fair share over the years, to be honest. But you know, so everything has been kind of okay. The deliveries is our savior. You know, the delivery business will see us through however long this lockdown is.
Okay, good
stuff. If it's May, April, we'll be fine. You know, we're not making any money, you know, but we'll survive it.
Okay. And Pascal, what are your products, by the way?
Coffee, pastries. Pancakes is our main kind of pancakes is our famous thing that we do. We have different variation, you know, brunch boxes, pancake boxes. So they're all kind of big sharing boxes that we deliver out. You know, we deliver kind of up to 10 an hour. Everywhere in Galway, basically.
But Pascal, are you from France?
I was born in France. I grew up in England, and I've been here 15 years or so.
Well, you must know, I don't know how long you lived in France, but you must know that the French love paperwork and bureaucracy.
And, yes.
and old-fashioned carbon paper. But this is the statement from Galway City Parking Enforcement Section. Well, God, I swear to God we were talking about mass murder here. Galway City Council will not be commenting on any specific cases. We can confirm that parking regulations continue to be enforced in Galway City. Do you pay rates, Pascal?
Yes.
Yes, of course
I paid my rates for the 10 plus 11 years.
Did you get a reduction this year because of no footfall?
Oh, I did, yeah. We all did. All businesses did in town.
Okay.
As far as I know, sorry.
Yeah. Okay, Lorraine Hayden.
Yes, hello, Joe.
Good afternoon. What's your situation? By the way, did you hear those two clips we played?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
sorry.
Well, would you describe yourself? I'm looking at you. There's a great bit of go in you, Lorraine. You're on the ball. I just want you to listen to these two clips carefully, if you would, please. And I want you to interpret them. This first clip is Micheál Martin talking to the Irish Daily Mirror about the continuation of the lockdown.
Okay.
We are looking at a continuation of severe restrictions. certainly right into April. We will have a meeting today of the Cabinet Subcommittee on COVID. We'll have a presentation from Dr. Ronan Glynn and Neffet, and we'll have a presentation from the National Task Force on Vaccinations and then the HSE. So our priority is schools, and it will be a phased return of schools, beginning with the junior infants and senior infants, the early years, and also then the leaving certs.
Lorraine, what do you hear the Taoiseach saying? How long will the lockdown last from your hearing that?
I feel that it will last a long time. I think they have to give us whatever information they can based on the current situation.
Okay, but is your understanding of that clip that the lockdown will last well into April?
Yes.
Okay. And this is what the Taoiseach's interpretation of the clip is.
I saw the clip from the Taoiseach's interview last night, and what he said was that we're facing into tough restrictions into April, and I don't think anyone's surprised at that. He didn't say that we're going to be in level 5 till May, or that we were facing 9 more weeks of a level 5 lockdown. So, you know, in fairness to him, I don't think that's what he actually said.
Do you think that's what he said, Lorraine?
Joe, I feel currently the government, there's too many chiefs and not enough Indians, and I think everybody thinks they're the boss around there right now, and they're not really listening to each other.
Okay, so tell us your, everyone is in a unique situation, but what is your situation, Lorraine?
Our situation was we were greatly outgrowing our tiny house we have here in Donabate, and we decided to sell it. We had a very hard time selling it just because there were a lot of sale agreements that fell through for various reasons because of COVID.
Right.
We were as patient as we could. We eventually snagged some buyers, and we said to ourselves, we have to hold on to these guys no matter what. We're moving into a new house in Drogheda, which we were told at the time would be ready at the end of January. Of course, with most new bills, that fell back in time. Mm-hmm. And we had already committed to buying our house and signing a legal contract saying we had to be out of it by the 5th of February. So we scrambled to try and find some short-term accommodation for 3 kids and a dog, and that wasn't easy.
Okay.
It was very expensive. We found something in the local area. We wanted to stay here because we wanted to keep the kids in the school, etc. And we thought that would be for a month, and then it was 2 months, and now it's 3 months, and now it's 4 months. And we've gone from being, you know, settled, secure homeowners to a family in short-term rental that's costing us an absolute fortune. And I just feel, I'm a bit angry, I'm a bit frustrated that it seems, you know, our hard-earned cash that we've worked hard to get is going down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of the nice things maybe we hoped we could get in our new house, we're not going to be able to get, you know. And this was the house, you know, my husband said we are not moving from this house. This is our house now. And we were very excited about it. But now we're just, the kids are very unsettled. You know, I'm unsettled. I'm very anxious, I have to say, all the time about the whole situation. And I'm kind of feeling, you know, retail workers are out there working because food is an essential service. We have to have food.
So,
I feel we have to have shelter too. We have to have our houses.
So you've written to the Minister, Dara O'Brien. What have you implored him to do?
I implored him to think carefully about the fact that the government bangs on a lot about providing houses for people, that they're doing their best to house people. I didn't hear of any huge outbreaks of COVID amongst construction workers who largely work outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm feeling that construction is an essential service. And I think people in shops should be vaccinated because they're out there working, mm-hmm. you know, for us to give us what we need. And I think construction workers should be vaccinated to be able to get out there, finish the houses that are almost finished and give people what they need. You know, the money we would have spent on our house, you know, to tradespeople to get nice floors and carpets and stuff, that would have fed the economy, you know. But that money that we would have spent is gone. We'll have to get it from somewhere else. We'll have to go through our budget and see what we can do. And it just seems to be very wasteful of money to me, what's happening to my family right now. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are caught in the same limbo that we find ourselves in now.
Yeah, but again, I'm looking at Michael Lahan on Twitter. I'm looking at Jennifer Bray from the Irish Times on Twitter. This is from last night. These are from the cabinet meeting, obviously. Level 5 restrictions to remain for the foreseeable future, well into the next few months leading up to summer.
Yeah.
Beyond schools, don't expect any moves to ease restrictions next week.
I know.
That's the message coming out of the cabinet committee meeting. That was the subcommittee, which is the powerful committee, last night. Now, whether they're more powerful than NPHET, they would say we're working hand in hand. Our own Micheál Lehane said it's possible that the strict restrictions could remain in place until early May, a cabinet committee heard tonight. It doesn't look like there's anything going to happen before May.
It definitely doesn't bode well for us or anyone who's in our situation. And
but are you arguing, Lorraine, which is one argument that people put forward in other countries, that you should isolate where the outbreaks are? And I don't just mean geographically, that's one argument, but also sectorally. In other words, if the outbreaks are in schools, which they're not, overall, you isolate the schools. You're saying if the outbreaks are low in the construction industry, you allow the construction industry to reopen.
But that seems to make sense. But it's also, what is essential? What is essential in life here? What do we really need? We need health workers to work in the hospitals. We need people to work in the shops so we can buy food. But is home, is your roof above your head and your security not one of those rights that people should have, that people would deem to be essential? And if you think about the meatpacking industry, there have been tons of outbreaks in meatpacking industries, but they haven't shut down the entire meatpacking industry because of it, we need food.
Okay, let's go back. The reason we're trying to get clarity until, insofar as we know in this world, but if the lockdown is continuing until May, it's now February, March, April, May, we're in a complete, that means it's nearly a full year. This is, let's play the Leo Varadkar clip first, which is his interpretation of what the Taoiseach said. And then we have the new clip supplied by the Irish Daily Mirror, the Taoiseach.
I saw the clip from the Taoiseach's interview last night, and what he said was that we're facing into tough restrictions into April. And I don't think anyone's surprised at that. He didn't say that we're going to be in level 5 till May, or that we were facing 9 more weeks of a level 5 lockdown. So, you know, in fairness to him, I don't think that's what he actually said.
This is I haven't heard this. This is a clip that the Irish Daily Mirror have just supplied us with, that they based their headline on, which the Taoiseach is contradicting. The headline based on the interview with the Taoiseach, level 5 lockdown till May.
So realistically, are we looking at June before people can go out and get a haircut?
I'm not saying that. No, I'm saying that. So I'll just give you the vaccination roll-up. Mm-hmm. So let's come to the restrictions then.
Okay, so April you said that you see...
Well, I think we've already indicated that certainly beyond Easter.
Beyond Easter.
We'll look at it again. But I think to the end of April you can look at significant restrictions. We'll review it after that then, because we have to see where we are.
There it is, the end of April. The end of April is the 1st of May.
Mm-hmm.
Unless...
It's an indefinite situation that we're all in, that we're all living in, and it is very hard for anybody.
Unless they're going to extend April, then we'll have April the 31st and April the 32nd and April the 33rd this year. But the last day of April is Friday the 30th. The first day, May Day, is the 1st, and the bank holiday is on the Monday. That's the Taoiseach clearly saying. It's level 5 till the 30th, the end of April, he said.
Yeah.
That is, the end of April is the 1st of May, bar 0 seconds at midnight. Okay, I just wish people would, I wish we were told clearly what's happening, because people just looking and listening to our communication this morning, that May Day deadline has scared the living lives out of people who've already gone through a horrific year. That means from last March, before St. Patrick's Day, March, and then we had a little bit of a siesta in August and a little bit of a knees up in at Christmas, even though I think most people did adhere to it. And then the calamity of January, the calamity, the worst month ever in terms of fatalities. And then the Taoiseach is saying one thing, and it looks to me, it sounds to me, Lorraine, that the Tán is just saying another thing. George Lawler, George is a Labour Party councillor, former mayor of Wexford. George, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you doing?
Back to, by the way, when is the, what's your interpretation? You're years in the in politics, George. What's your interpretation of what the Taoiseach is saying and what the Tán is just saying?
I think the lack of certainty is the thing that is really, really annoying people. And I think, unfortunately, what we have is almost a competition between the two leaders in the state, the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste. Personally, I think Micheál Martin was getting it out, trying to get it out there before the Tánaiste got it out, because we have seen in the past where we've had almost a competition to get the news out there.
Okay, I take that point, but I won't go down the party political line because I'll be told to have someone on from Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin.
That's my own opinion.
Fine. I just want to, and I know you didn't ring in about that, so it's me that's at fault again. George, you're ringing in about Pascal and the lockdown and parking tickets and parking fines. He says if they don't stop fining him in Galway for collecting his crepes, his load of crepes and his coffees from his shop to try and keep and stay in business and pay rates. If they don't stop hitting him with parking fines, it's not funny. He's going to go out of business. George, what's happening in Wexford?
It's across the country, Joe, as far as I can see. I mean, I think essential workers and workers who are providing a service still in lockdown, particularly in the retail sector, you know, you have supermarkets and pharmacies and banks. I think they're really being penalised because they're going into work. Very few people are actually going into town centres. They're having to pay parking charges. Where they don't, they're being ticketed. I've requested in Wexford that we relax the parking charges, and the line that I'm being given is, because the government will not refund the local authorities for the lack of, for the loss in parking charges, that the local authorities are not in a position to relax the enforcement of it. I know Wexford County Council, for instance, is down hundreds of thousands of euro, you know, heading towards €1 million in parking charges. That will not be reimbursed by central government. And until that time, I don't see the local authorities relaxing it. And essential workers in particular are being really penalised. They're stepping up to the plate, they're going into the cold case day after day, and yet they're being hit by parking charges in a crisis, and then they're being hit by parking fines where they don't pay them. And many are of the assumption that there isn't parking charges in place, because in the first lockdown, the government did say that local authorities would relax the enforcement of parking charges. However, in this lockdown, that's not the case.
And did they relax parking charges in the first lockdown?
They relaxed the enforcement of them. So in other words, unless you were parked, they still had the warnings out to look at people who were parking maybe illegally on double yellow lines in disabled spaces, you know, which is fine, no problem, nobody has any argument with that. But the notion that people are going into supermarkets to the front line, or banks, or pharmacies, I've had numerous representations made to me, and they're really being hit by these at a time when we should be actually standing up and saying, listen, lads, fair play for doing this and helping us out and keeping the thing ticking over and keeping essential services going. And as a result of that, we're not going to hit you with parking charges. In fact, it's the reverse.
Okay. George Lawler, Labour Councillor in Wexford, Lorraine Hayden, thanks indeed, appealing for some nuances, which a lot of people are. Pascal Wren also appealing for a nuance in terms of charges that are putting him out of business. On the basis of that clip from the Taoiseach, we are going to be, this is my reading of it, and we'll play it again, this most recent clip. Just play it, and then we'll work out the extent of the level 5 from what he says last night.
So realistically, are we looking at June before people can go out and get a haircut?
I'm not saying that. I'm just giving you the vaccination roll-up. Mm-hmm. So let's come to the restrictions then.
Okay, so April, you said that you see...
Well, I think we've already indicated that certainly beyond Easter.
Beyond Easter.
We'll look at it again. But I think to the end of April, you can look at significant restrictions. We'll review it after that then, because we have to see where we are.
Okay, the end of April, significant restrictions. You mentioned severe restrictions earlier on. People are interpreting that as 70 more days of level 5. That's 10 weeks, 70 more days of level 5.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And back to the awful death toll in this COVID. And then all the ancillary deaths that we're not hearing about, people being fed up, people being cast down, broken-hearted. John Keogh. John, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
You're broken-hearted about your sister, Mandy.
We were absolutely devastated. I mean, listening to your other contributors there just a few minutes ago, it pales into insignificance, to be honest. You know,
and tell us what happened, John.
My sister Amanda, she was a professional healthcare provider. She worked for a company called Recovery at Home Ireland.
Okay.
And she was a HCA, which means she was a home care assistant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the front line are nurses and doctors and ambulance men, and they do fantastic work, and they would be at the battlefront of COVID-19.
Yeah.
And my sister and other HCAs, they would be in the trenches, and they would do the wound dressings, and they would do the cleaning and the tidying up. My sister dealt with very complex patients who were recovering at home, and their families would have decided to keep their family member at home for one-to-one care to prevent them from getting COVID-19 and obviously to be in their own environment and to be with their family. So Mandy's role was to go in and to deal with these complex patients and nurture them and help their families and everything else. And then she would go home to her own two daughters, and she'd carry on with her normal life and doing her shopping and things like that. And on the 6th of January, she started to get headaches, and she rang me looking for Nurofen because all her teeth were paining her.
Okay.
So I dropped some Nurofen to her home, and I didn't go into the house because of the COVID-19 restrictions. And you just don't know. People just don't know whether someone has it or they don't.
Yeah.
And I put the Nurofen in her letterbox, and I rang her on the phone, and I said, "They're there, Mandy." And she said, "Thanks very much." Within 3 days, her daughter, who lives with her, had to get her into Beaumont Hospital. And 3 days after that, she was put on oxygen and respiratory support. Another 4 days, she was taken by Beaumont Hospital to the Mater by escort.
Right.
And she was put on a ventilator. Before she went on that ventilator, she did a video call with all her family. And, you know, even then, she was worried about us and asking us if we were okay.
Yeah.
Like, she was an amazing person, and she always wanted to care for people. Even in her job, the work that she did, when she was collected, she'd always say, "I hope Mary is okay," or "Patty," or whatever the patient's name was when she left. And within you know, a couple of hours, she was put on a ventilator, and she never woke up, she never came, she never pulled through. And we always think of Mandy as this caring person who had a great sense of humour. She had a lovely life. She cared so much about people. Her daughters were her life. And, you know, when she got COVID, we just felt sick. We just were so worried about her. And within 3 weeks of her being, she was on a ventilator for almost 11 days. And after 11 days, she died. We went to the funeral. There was only 10 in the funeral home. She was in a closed coffin. We couldn't touch her. You know, we were totally isolated. And you know, like, HCA for home care assistants, I don't think they get the recognition that they deserve. Like, these are the people that would go in and they would change incontinence pads, yeah, or yeah, they would change sheets, or even have a cup of tea with the patient, yeah, you know. Mm-hmm. And the same with carers. Like, these people are totally unrecognised in the country. And my purpose of getting on to you, Joe, was to get her the recognition that she deserved.
You say, you know, my sister Mandy was not a COVID-19 statistic. She was a mother, a sister, an aunt, a friend, and most of all, an amazing carer and a healthcare professional. I will always remember the love and care she brought to this world. And I would ask for you reading this to take a moment to remember her and other healthcare professionals that have given their lives to COVID, and for the families that have been robbed of the love in their lives. People who die from COVID-19 are not just a number. They are the many sisters, aunts, uncles, mothers and fathers that will be missed forever. Our lives have been changed forever, and we never thought that this could happen to us. And she was a very young woman as well. She's obviously your best buddy as well, John, was she?
Joe, we're traditional Irish twins. There's only 11 months between me and Mandy, you know.
Yeah.
And
do you remember do you remember how far back would your memory go with Mandy?
Joe, I have a picture here in my hall that I look at every day. Myself and Mandy got a photograph taken when Mandy was 3, and I was just over 1 and 8 months or something. Yeah. And even then, she was minding me. You know, like, she always would ask, even when she was dying, she asked how myself, my wife and my son were, and if we were okay, you know. And that's the type of person she was. Like all the hundreds of home care assistants that are out there.
And did you always,
the hundreds of carers,
John, would you always have known that she was going to be such a carer?
Yes, because, you know, when she lived in London for a long time and she came back, but she always cared about people, and she got into the home care assistance industry just under 20 years ago, and she loved it, and she loved helping people. I have another sister who's a healthcare professional in the Mater Hospital, and it just runs in my family. They just care. They care all the time, you know. And, I never thought for one minute that, she worked Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. She looked after the patients in their home on Christmas Day. She gave up her own Christmas Day to be with her own daughters to look after her patients. And this is the sacrifice that she made and hundreds of other HCAs make, you know.
And you say, which we've heard, unfortunately, so many stories that we didn't know that it was going to happen so quick, and we didn't know. And it was Rachel Ward, the doctor who's from the UK, who spoke to us the other day, and she was saying that she realises that when people come in, are brought through the door of the hospital, she has her mask on, but there's a strong possibility this will be the last face they will ever see. It won't be one of their family. And your phone call, did you know on your last phone call, John, that the end was near?
No, John. No. I never thought for one minute that it would be the last time that I would talk to her, you know. And the same with my other sisters and my brother. We never thought for one minute that this was it, you know. And last week, Joe, I mean, like, when you think back last week, you were talking about a doctor who wasn't going to give vaccines to patients. Yeah. I was so angry that day, Joe, you know. Yeah. You know, people still think that this virus isn't real. They think that it's not going to affect them. They think it's made up. It's a conspiracy. But it's not. It's a killer. It's there to kill.
And that doctor said, if people, what did he say about his own patients? If people are stupid enough to take the vaccine, that's their own business. But I won't be giving it to them.
Well,
and by the way, there's been a cone of silence has fallen down around the medical world since that was revealed 9 days ago here in Liveline. But anyway, Well, John, is it fair for me to ask? Because I'm sure you would all, you know, all the what ifs that come up in our lives when someone we love has passed, especially unexpectedly. Have you said to yourself, if I'd known Mandy was in such a dire situation, I would have said this and I would have said that?
Joe, her daughters appealed to her in November to give up working completely.
Today, yeah.
To not continue doing what she was doing. You know, if that's not a what if, I don't know what is. But she didn't, because she loved what she did. You know, and a lot of people that are healthcare professionals and HCAs like Mandy, all their families are all worried sick because they don't know if they're going to be the next. And people got to remember that, you know, like what we see on the news every night is it's procedural now with the numbers of the deaths.
Yeah.
You know, 47 people died today, 57 died yesterday. It's now become procedural. And these are people's lives. It's my sister. It's other people's sisters, uncles, brothers, mothers, fathers. And we've just become so academic with it.
I think you have hit the nail on the head there, unfortunately. As we went over 4,000 who've died in the last year, John. Tell us about Mandy and her hobbies and her interests and her sense of humour and where she liked to go on holidays or what musician she lived.
Mandy loved music. She loved country music, Joe. She loved singing. When she was younger, she had a guitar and she used to sing. She used to go around the country doing variety shows and talent competitions. Yeah, she really loved it. Like all my sisters could sing. I'm the only crow in the family. But Mandy, when she was in London, she used to sing around the Irish workerman's clubs, you know?
Okay, yeah.
And she was a great entertainer and she loved singing and she loved country music. She loved that, and she was very artistic as well. I mean, she took up the hobby of decorating. She loved interior design, and she loved her home, and she loved all of that, you know. But she had a wicked sense of humour as well, you know.
Okay.
I mean, like, she's very funny, you know. And even at the funeral, we were telling stories. I remember years ago, when Mandy was only early 20s, there was a place in Lusk, Murray's the Lusk, and the Chippendales were there, and all the girls on the street went, and Mandy went, and Mandy was very bashful. One of the Chippendales started dancing beside her, and she fainted, you know. You know.
Oh, gosh.
But she was so funny. I mean, what you read there, Joe, I posted on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because her family asked. She loves Facebook. She loves social media. She has so many friends on Facebook.
She loves contact.
She loves contact with people. And as of this morning, we've had just over 1,100 comments of prayer and condolence. And, you know, like, she was well-loved. Everybody loved her, even the patients that she looked after, they loved her. And this morning I spoke to her employer, the CEO of the company, and even she is absolutely heartbroken at the loss of Mandy because of who Mandy was, the type of person she was. And a huge amount of home care assistants, they all have the same type of personality as Mandy. They're caring, they're loving.
Bubbly,
and they sacrifice everything.
Yeah,
their family time, their social time.
And as you say, Christmas Day didn't mean that she visited her friends who she worked with, not just her family.
She gave up her Christmas dinner, Joe, so the family of the patient she looked after could have theirs. You know, and that's the type of person she was, you know, and she loved life, and she loved everything about life, you know. So we're all absolutely devastated, Joe. And I think that what a lot of people should do is just bear in mind that if they see a home care assistant getting a bus home or getting a taxi or whatever, remember that they're probably out to doing 12 hours worth of work. They've given up everything. They've put their life on the line for their job. You know, and a lot of people tend to forget that, you know.
You say, well, I'll leave to, I know she loved, what's the song you told us she loved? She loved Country Roads.
She loved Country Roads. I mean, I've heard that song so much in my life. She sang it, you know, and that was her main party song, you know, and she loved it, you know.
Okay, well, as we play this song, with your permission, this is Robert Mazzell singing it. Maybe you would talk us into the song by telling us about Mandy, as you say, your sister.
Well, Mandy was an amazing person. She loved music. She loved her family. She loved candles, you know, and she loved singing. And, when she used to sing that song, I always think of her when she was younger. She used to wear rah-rah skirts with her guitar and singing Country Roads, you know. You know, she absolutely loved the show, you know. And I do thank you for letting me come on air and just to let the world know about Mandy and about the home care assistants that are out there. Because, you know, like if anybody thinks COVID is not real, come into my shoes now for a couple of hours.
That last voice was the voice of Noreen Rabbit with Robert Mazzell. And the words, John, I will always love you. You're saying it to Mandy and Mandy's saying it to you.
Thanks.
I sometimes think, John, where I'm sitting, that the death toll from COVID in the last year, we're approaching now the first anniversary of the first person who died in Ireland, but not just the death toll from COVID, all the ancillary, the deaths that are of friends and family and wives and husbands and fathers, mothers that died of a broken heart after the love of their lives passed away from COVID or vice versa. Just the downcastness of the last year. Sometimes I think, John, it can be too hard to bear. I really do. So, John, may Mandy rest in peace, safe in the arms of Our Lady Queen of Heaven. And may you and your family and her beautiful, beautiful daughters and you, her beautiful buddy, her best friend, may you all look after yourself, John. We will see better days ahead, I hope.
Thanks, Joe. Could I just say thank you to the staff of Beaumont Hospital, staff of the Mater Hospital, the frontline defenders that transported Mandy from Beaumont to the Mater Hospital, to all of the staff of Murphy's Funeral Home who took care of Mandy, and for my friend Father Paul who celebrated Mandy's mass and death, and everybody that helped and assisted the two girls over the last few days, Joe.
Okay, and we think of all the frontline staff, all the medics, all the paramedics, the firefighters, all those who, and their families who've given so much in the last year, and our officials, and the Pauls, we know them all by their first name, the Pauls and the Tonys and the Ronans in our department, and our politicians as well. We're thinking of them at this time, and we're reminded of the work they're doing because of the life and unfortunate early passing of the beautiful Amanda Mandy Coe. John, Gura Mila Mahogut, and we'll talk soon. And look after each other, John. Look after each other.
Thanks very much, Joe, and God bless you and your team. Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe at rt.ie. And back to the... Was this light relief during the week? It was in one sense, but also there's an issue here that should be dealt with, especially in the new world we're living in, 2021 Ireland. We had, it was Blue who blew the whistle. Blue Scannell blew the whistle here on Liveline 2. What day is today? Friday, Wednesday, about the state of the Miss Ireland competition and the fact that she'd withdrawn because of those ludicrous rules which said you cannot have given birth. cannot have given birth, full stop. You must be of good character, whatever that means. You must not have been, no, you must never, you must not be married or ever have been married, if you follow me. And as Holly Carpenter pointed out yesterday, was Holly or one of the other contestants, and Holly was a winner, that was meant, if you were engaged, you wouldn't tell them you were engaged in case it would appear. Who do I go to first? I go to Siobhan Dunn. Would you do the Mary Dunlow? Because your point is you're a winner of the Mary Dunlow. Good afternoon, Siobhan Dunn in Scotland. You're a winner of the Mary from Dunlow. Well done. But you say the Mary of Dunlow Festival was way ahead of the Miss Ireland competition in terms of the 20th century or even the 24th century.
Yeah, I think so, Joe. I mean, when I heard this yesterday, I was a wee bit shocked, actually. It was somebody from Donegal that had actually sent me your interview with the girls. And I was shocked because I took part in the festival 6 years ago now. And at the time, I was unmarried and I had a child, an eight-year-old son. And it was never an issue. I was told that, of course, I could come and take part in the competition. The only kind of factor being that I had to have some relation to the area, and my two grandparents were from the Rosses. So, yeah, I went along and didn't think that there would be any issue, and there wasn't.
Right. Rightly so. Why should there be? And did you, when you heard this about the Miss Ireland competition, and indeed the Miss World competition, that they stipulate in black and white, before you must be of good character, you cannot have given birth. That's the actual wording.
Mm-hmm. I mean, listening to your programme yesterday, I think maybe one of the organisers or somebody on the programme that said, you know...
No, the organisers won't come on, Siobhan.
Right, OK. Well, I mean, somebody did say in your show yesterday that these were 50-odd years old, these rules, is that right?
Miss World is going for 70 years, isn't it?
70 years. So, yeah. I mean, the fact they've not been updated is probably the shock factor to me. The fact that these rules were invented in the first place, I'm not shocked at that. I mean, society's moved on greatly over the past 100 years, you know, even the past maybe 20 years. So I'm not shocked that these rules ever existed, but I'm shocked that they're still being implemented today. To connect that to having good character, I don't really understand what that means. You know, I would argue that I was probably better as a person after having my child. And I know, speaking to a lot of parents, mothers and fathers that have got children, you know, children can make you, you know, they make you a better person. So for me, having a child, it probably made me a better person in character.
Yeah, of course. Well, I agree, as a lot of people would say, but it's of no relevance to a competition whether you've given birth or not.
No, and I mean, I actually spoke to a Scottish contestant of the Mary from Dunlow, Aisling Frail. So Aisling won the competition in 2003. Her parents are from Donegal. She went on to win the Miss Scotland the following year. So I spoke to her about this earlier, about the rules, etc. And she said to me, you know, the only thing that I can think of that when it comes to, say, Miss World, you know, your expectation as a title holder is to travel the world. Now, quite rightly so, if you've got a child, that you know, that is quite difficult to do. I don't think I would be comfortable leaving my child to travel the world. But that's everybody's objective. It depends what they want. But still to say that, you know, it's written into rules, I think it would be better to say, you know, if you've got a child and you enter, we would be expecting you to travel. And let the contestants know that before they take part, so then they can make the choice. Can I leave my child for maybe a month or a couple of weeks at a time? Give the woman the choice to decide that as a mother.
Or can I bring the child with me?
You know, certainly in my case, I remember exactly the conversation I had with Martina Boyle, who was one of the organisers at the time, and I said to her, you know, what's the situation? I've got my son. And she said, bring him with you. Bring the whole family with you. Now, that's something that we would have typically done anyway, every year coming to the festival. So my son came with me, and then on my reigning year, my son stayed with me a couple of the nights with the girls. Now, he absolutely loved being part of that. It's something that he still speaks about today. And for me, it's really important that he remembers, you know, the culture and the Irish heritage that our family have. And for me, it was a whole educational development for him at that age. It's something that he'll treasure forever. So I think if you can bring your children along, why not? You know, yeah, get them part
absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely. Siobhan, thanks, Anita. That's Siobhan Dunn. Siobhan is also a journalist, I think, in Scotland at the minute. By the way, we've had a statement from some of the sponsors who were on, well, they're gone off the website now. They were on the Miss Ireland website. And we're trying to find out who sponsors the Miss World. Do the likes of Coca-Cola and McDonald's, do they actually agree with this Miss World stipulation? We're told that you can never have given birth if you wish to apply or be considered as a contestant. Zipyard, I mentioned all these sponsors the other day. They were on their site for 2019. The Zipyard Ireland, they say the criteria for entry to Miss Ireland is not in line with our Zipyard values, our ethos, and that's the end of us and the Miss Ireland. Suzanne Jackson, founder of Dripping Gold Tan, has confirmed to Liveline that Dripping Gold is no longer Dripping Gold to the Miss Ireland organisation. They're no longer a sponsor of Miss Ireland. Una O'Driscoll, Managing Director of Platinum Hair Extensions, is no longer affiliated at Miss Ireland, and say that we haven't been a sponsor since 2019. Frank Owens, co-owner of So Amazing Couture, confirmed to Liveline that his brand is no longer affiliated with Miss Ireland. Gary Pillow of House of Lore Jewellery was very unhappy that we mentioned his brand. Oh, sorry, I didn't expect that. But anyway, Gary Pillow of House of Lore Jewellery, they're very popular, aren't they? For sale in Miss Kilkenny Design Alley, was very unhappy that we had mentioned his brand on the radio in association with Miss Ireland. But Gary, I just read out from the Miss Ireland website that you were their jewellery sponsor, the House of Lore. And if you're not a jewellery sponsor, just tell us that and ask them to take your name down. But I just read out from the website. Let me bring Jackie Moore, who was Miss Ireland in 1976. You've been listening to this debate, Jackie. What do you think of the women who've spoken? And they're not women on the sidelines, which that's no issue. But they're women who are directly involved, like yesterday, Chelsea, who's Miss Ireland, Blue, who could have been Miss Ireland but pulled out. And Chelsea, who's currently Miss Ireland, said, no, this is outdated and disconnected, and I wouldn't shed a tear if they stripped me of the crown this afternoon. Jackie, what do you think?
Well, I'm really impressed with the young women of today, and I think it's absolutely wonderful they have a voice and they're speaking out. I'm just thinking that the original Miss World, started by Julia Morley and Eric, that was originally for, using beauty with a purpose and mm-hmm. helping charities and organizations. But that was begun in 1951. And the concept of the Irish woman in those days is vastly yeah. different to what it is now. And in those days, like, as we know, I mean, we've come a long way since then. And a woman was to be beautiful and basically an object and didn't have a voice so much. And the fact that she couldn't have had a child or she had to be of a virtuous nature and all of that was very pertinent to the, you know, the times of then. But it's quite different now. And I think it's wonderful. And I think changes should be made with that. And I just want to say that mm-hmm. in the past, there were always three archetypes of woman. There was the maiden, the mother, and the crone. And the beauty contests are all about the maiden, which is, you know, young and free and you know, beautiful, but mm-hmm. her chastity and purity were very important. And, you know, as we all know, we move to another phase, you know, later on with age, and we go through a nurturing stage and, you know, the stage of wisdom. But it's kind of solidified and frozen in mm-hmm. that era. And I think we're not like that now. We embrace all of them. And it's really interesting, the word virgin actually originally meant free and autonomous and independent. And somehow that got, maybe with the Catholic connotations in the Virgin Mary, that became very kind of sacrosanct.
And Jackie, in your day, could you buy votes the way you can buy them now?
I think that is absolutely scandalous. I was absolutely, I'm shocked more with that than I am with the other rules, because, you know, I think they can change. But this, is, I don't, it just seems like a corporation. It seems like so heartless and discriminatory. And it's like money speaks. And I think it's absolutely dreadful. And I actually met with another Miss Ireland yesterday, and she agreed. It was horrible. And I spoke to another one, you know, last night, and we all agreed that it's ridiculous. How did this happen? Who's running it?
Yeah. Katie Cooley, stay there if you would, Jackie, with us, please. Jackie Moore is in Dublin. Katie
certainly,
Cooley,
certainly.
Katie, are you a contestant this year?
Yeah, I am. I'm a Miss Dublin finalist for this year.
Okay. And what do you think of this debate?
So I just really want to lay out the facts. I've been listening for the last few days, and I've been getting messages the last few days and seeing everything that's going on. And I just wanted to lay out the facts. There's a lot of accusations that have been made that are factually untrue.
Okay.
And not fair to the people that are competing.
Okay.
So there was a comment made about there's no diversity within the competition. Someone had a glance overview of the photos of the girls for Dublin. But in fact, if you had a full overview of the entire competition for all of the counties, you'd see there are girls who come from different backgrounds, different skin colour, eye colour, hair colour. There's girls from all of Ireland with completely different backgrounds, and we all don't look the same.
Okay.
That comment was not fair to be made. And there are current title holders that are of different skin colour and backgrounds.
Yeah.
And I think that was very fair on them.
Okay.
Also, there was another comment made that the rules are hidden. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. If you go on the Miss Ireland website and click to apply, it's the first thing that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all there. And that's not me giving my opinion, saying they're all right and they should be there.
Okay.
I'm saying in front of you in black and white and you see them.
But you're saying because the rules are there, that's fine.
No, I never said that. I just said that's not me saying that they're correct, that they're there. I'm saying they are in front of you and they're in black and white.
But that doesn't make them right.
I never said that it was right. I'm just saying that they're there, and there was a comment made that they're hidden, which it wasn't. On your show on Wednesday, there was a comment made that they're hidden.
Yeah, well, it's so. They're not hidden.
They're not hidden. So
but they are. But they are there. They are real. You must have never given birth to a child.
They're also affiliated with the rules from Miss World. And it's just a lot.
Yeah,
lot
but
of
if Miss Ward said we shall enslave people, that's one of our rules. Just because Miss Ward says it doesn't mean and because they write it down doesn't mean it's right.
There's been a lot of there's been a bit of research done into the rules for Miss Ward, and I have looked into myself, and a lot of other people within the organisation have looked at it. And the rule of never have given birth to a child and marriage, there's actually a lot of countries involved in the Miss World competition, and there's a lot of countries that have different religions and different beliefs around marriage and having children at young ages and having children out of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So the rules are there to as respect for all of the countries that are involved. They're not there to discriminate against one specific group of people. They're there to respect everyone's beliefs in the different countries and the religion.
Hang on, I don't know. You've lost me there. So you're saying the reason why there's a phrase, it's not a rule, it's an eligibility rule. You can be disqualified. There's a phrase, have never given birth to a child, be unmarried or never have been married. That's there for why?
There's several reasons that I assume or I hope that they're going to come forward with, but there's several reasons already that are there. One is the religions and beliefs of the different countries. Out of respect, they just have that one rule for all of the countries. I understand it's outdated for our country and for the women in our country.
Yeah, but like the Miss Ireland competition is not run by the government or the Catholic Church or the Protestant Church. It's run It's run by a private organisation that makes money out of it, which is fine. Which is fine. They're the ones that came up with this rule, be unmarried or never have been married, have never given birth to a child.
No, they didn't come up with that rule. It's a rule from the world that they have to comply with. They didn't make it up and put it there. They have to comply.
Okay, so you're saying if they had their way,
they could change it completely.
Could they? But that's fantastic. So they don't have to pay if they decided. No, we don't agree with that. Therefore, we're not going to pay money to the Miss World competition to buy the franchise for Miss Ireland, because that's what happens, isn't it? It's all money, Katie.
Or if they don't follow the rules for Miss World, therefore no woman can represent Ireland at Miss World.
Oh my God.
and Ireland won't be represented.
Oh my God. What sweet difference would that? What sweet difference would that make if someone, if an organisation in Ireland, who bought the franchise, now I know it's money, if they said no, we don't agree with it, and there will be no Miss Ireland competing this year, do you think the country would fall asunder if we took a stand? If the organisation, it's not,
and
it's not
the
government.
Didn't send a girl away for Miss World, Ireland wouldn't be represented at
Miss
World.
So, would they go ahead without us, I wonder? You know what I mean, Katie? It's not, they're not, it's not the Olympics.
Being, having the
title, it's not the UN.
Progressing on to represent your country is a very big deal for some girls.
But the representative of Ireland this year in the Miss Ireland competition will be the person who has the most money.
No, that
yes.
is false.
You buy the votes.
No. Actually, this is a point I would like to get across.
Okay.
Yesterday it was mentioned about the voting and how you pay for votes.
That's from the website,
voting,
yeah.
It's one aspect.
Oh.
Of the competition. There are 6 titles for Dublin. 5 are chosen by judges. And 1 is by vote, which was not mentioned yesterday.
Katie, thanks for that, because we can't get the organisers on. But explain that to me again. On their website, they say, yeah, or on the app, they say, this is how you buy votes.
So if you go on and you vote for Dublin, you will see myself and 20 other girls on there. And you can cast a free vote or you can pay for more votes.
Yeah, you've won free vote.
You've won free vote, yes. Yeah. The app acts as basically one judge, and there could be 5 other judges. There are 6 titles for Dublin. 1 title is from the app vote. The other 5 are from judges.
But so
if you don't win the vote, it's not the be-all and end-all of the competition, and you don't have to pay for votes. No one is forced to pay for votes. I myself have been posting online asking for people to download and vote for me for free. My mom has been sharing it on her Facebook pages, family, friends, to vote for free. You're not forced to pay for these votes. If you want to pay, you can.
Yeah, but if you have €1,000 to buy votes...
If you have €100 and you want to buy votes, you can if you want to.
Yeah.
That's completely up to yourself, but no one says you have to pay and you have to pay to vote for me.
No one has said that. So
it's not really
voting, is it?
It is voting.
So why you say it's irrelevant? Why do they have it, and why is there a leaderboard published to tell you where you are on the voting, so you can spend more money to try and get up the leaderboard?
Not everyone has to be on that leaderboard for the vote for the app. You could want to win by the judges' vote. Not everyone wants to win by the app for having your family pay for you to win. I'm sure that's not what everyone wants. You don't want to win a title and be known as the one that I had all my family pay for them. The app is the Miss Dublin People's Choice. You want people to choose to vote for you for free. You don't want your family to pay that €100 for your vote. So saying that...
Then why is the option there? This is what I'm saying. Why is the option...
If people want to buy more votes, but they can.
But, like, that's like saying you're going to vote for someone in an election, which is voting. That's where the word comes from, which is voting. You say, everyone has one vote for Mickey Murphy.
Yeah.
And if they want more votes for Mickey Murphy, they can buy them. And then you can follow with Tuba and say, man, but that's their choice.
If you also watch any shows on the TV, like The X Factor, you pay for votes.
I know. But they call it Miss Ireland, and it has got a title. Anyway, Katie, best of luck in it. You're not representative of the organisation, are you?
No, I'm not. No. I'm just a contestant for Miss Dublin.
Okay. And have you a view on the eligibility, which says you obviously be unmarried, never been married, has never given birth to a child, and be of good character?
Well, Joe, I don't really want to share my opinion on that. You know. I've already gotten a lot of messages.
What were they saying to you? Well done.
No, that we should be ashamed of ourselves.
No, we're not in favour of that now. That's not your... You know, just because you entered, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, I'm not...
Well, that's outrageous. You're not at fault here, Katie. Do you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
You're not. See, don't be upset. It's not you're not at fault here, Katie. You didn't come up with this rule. Somebody came up with this rule 70 years ago. Seriously, don't be cast down now. You're clarifying various points, and some of them are very useful.
We don't want anybody
attacking other women because they entered this. Seriously, you didn't come up with the rules. It's whoever came up with the rules. It's whatever organisations in Ireland benefit from this that should be asked about, be they sponsors or whatever, that should be asked what they think of this rule in this day and age.
I just think,
but not you, Katie. Katie, you're fine, Katie. If you want to do what you do, seriously. Ignore anyone trolling you, will you, please? You're a young woman. You don't need that.
I have a very thick skin, so I can take it. It's just a lot of the other girls, some of them are dropping out because people are putting pressure on them, saying you should rethink your life. And
No.
It's just inappropriate.
Now, you're right, that is inappropriate. The issue here is who wrote the rules, who enforces the rules,
exactly,
and who makes money. It's not the entrance, and who makes money out of the rules.
Exactly. If you want to put your energy into something, put it into signing Blitz, have a petition up, sign her petition, or email Miss World. Don't be sending me or any of the other contestants messages.
Yeah, well, that's not fair, Katie.
Chelsea
Farrell is there again. Chelsea, current Miss Ireland. Chelsea, I know you'll be upset hearing what Katie's just said, that she's been trolled and singled out. And that's outrageous.
And can I just say, though, again, this is just highlighting to me that the organisation haven't offered any support to the current girls that are obviously going through this. And I've been in touch with so many girls like Katie that are current contestants, and they all reached out to me last night, and I've had chats with them and everything, and there is quite a bit of it happening at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
Which again isn't fair, because this problem does not lie in the hands of the current contestants.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's something that if everyone can please stop doing, because I've been the other end of that and I know what trolling is like, and it's not nice and it's not fair on them girls.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will say that the Miss Ireland team have been in contact, though, and have been very supportive.
Okay.
Myself and the girls, they were in contact with us last night and have been back and forward with me, and they have been nothing but supportive, so I have nothing bad to say about them on that part. So I can't say that they haven't supported me, because they have.
Okay. Well, Katie, please don't be upset. Seriously, it's as I say, it's nothing to do with you. And you're a great young person, and who's come forward and spoken out, as you see it, as other people have spoken out as well. And let no one criticise you for that. Do you hear me? Let no one criticise you for that, Katie.
Yeah.
Okay. Have I another? Thanks. That's Katie Cooley. Have I another break to take?
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
That's it for today. A lot of people deeply moved, as I was, by John Keogh's tribute, not just to Mandy, his sister, who died, but to all the people on the front line, all the people working for the last year non-stop in all levels of our health service and beyond, looking after us. Back on Monday at 1:45, Sian O'Gorman produced.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.